UW, where people share the music they love. 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. Find our program schedule in every issue of Stylus magazine.
The following is an encore presentation from CKUW's archives. Archives of your favorite local programming are available online at ckuw.ca/schedule.
I can. How long will I need you? As long as the seasons need to follow their plan. How long will I be with you? As long as the sea is bound to wash upon the sand.
Good morning, if it is Friday morning, and you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, and it's 11 a.m. You're here, I'm here, and back for another Friday. What is the temperature today? It is 11. I think I find that to be rather cool for September 4th or 5th, whatever it is today. September 5th, Debbie's telling me the date. For this time of year, it's cool. And I remember being really, 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 really hot in August and really, really cold in October. But September was always my favorite time of year. But this year, it started out really, really cool. And, you know, I'm talking about this because it was cool for us. It's 10 times as cold for folks on the street. And as I say, every single Friday, be kind. If you're going to Tim's, if you're going to Robin's, if you're going to Starbucks, and you can afford an expensive cup of coffee, buy two of them. People need it more than you do. Or give them yours. And so I really implore you to really be kind today. And as everybody knows, the numbers are growing in the city, and they're expanding way too quickly. And I think the attitude that we have as a city and a province aren't necessarily the best. But be kind today, folks. It's a cool day. But today I have a newly found friend with us on air today. Rebecca Goulet, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Al. Thank you very much. How are you doing?
I'm well. A little hairy today, but our good friends at Salvation Army introduced us a couple of weeks ago, and we're really happy that they did that. And I don't have enough people with lived experience on air, and I'm so happy to have you on today because your story is impactful, and what you do now as an advocate is really, really important. But if, as I do with all my guests, as I just mentioned to you, I used to ask for a little bit of history, as far back as you want to go, or not, or what you care to share or not. Give our listeners just a little bit of background on who Rebecca Goulet is.
For sure. I mean, I could go back all the way back to the beginning, but we won't. I would try and keep it short and to the point.
No worries. We have time.
Main point, my mother raised me by herself. I had two sisters who came through CFS, but they're my sisters nonetheless. And then another sister along the way, Brianne. So starting with that, even I learned what they went through. So it's not exactly my lived experience, but the lived experience they shared with me about what they went through in the system. I was an athlete when I was younger. I played basketball, romance, all that kind of stuff. It was 17, and I was 17, and I was at a party, and I was very insistent on never doing cocaine or drugs or anything like that. And for some reason, I did, and I remember one of my friends saying to me at one point, "You're not the same Rebecca Goulet we once knew anymore." And it was like one trap door after another just kept giving out on me, giving out on me. I went to BHS. I had my first child, my son Hunter, when I was 19. And I stayed sober for 3 months, and then we had his baby shower. And the girls were going to the bar. They wanted to know if I wanted to come with them. I did, and I relapsed again. I had my daughter, Callie, when I was, I had her 4 years later in 2008. So, again, stayed sober for the first 3 months after. She was very collegey, but it was a vicious cycle. I also was going through health problems that I didn't know about. When I was in VHF in 2011, I kept going to, like, it's a work-based program, right? So I'd go to the doctor's office every day saying, I'm in so much pain. And eventually, after 3 months, I couldn't do it anymore. I loved the program. It was good. Well, I didn't love it.
Of course. You know, who loves therapy, right?
Yeah. There's always pieces of it, you know, that can be done better.
Yes, of course.
Staff or anything like that. But
what was the program again? VHF.
Behavioral Health Center.
Oh, yeah, BHF, Norbert, yeah, of course, yeah, yeah.
In St. Norbert.
Yes.
I mean, my mom had congestive heart failure, and we had gotten a bit of an argument because I wanted to go and have a couple of drinks, and she didn't want to watch the kids, and I took off anyways, and I didn't go far, and all of a sudden I saw ambulances driving down the perimeter, and I turned around, went back to the house, and she was having a heart failure. She was in heart failure, an attack, and I was just crying and crying and saying, why do I keep doing this? You know what I mean? Why? I don't get it. Like, why do I keep doing this? So, anyways, I was prescribed hydromorphone at a certain point for my pain, but I was misdiagnosed with RA, rheumatoid arthritis. I do have fibromyalgia, which a lot of people get misdiagnosed.
You're up against it in the pain category here.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's not... Well, now I've been diagnosed with functional neurological disorder, so it's very rare, and nobody's heard of it. And it is, like, the flare-ups with the fibro are just, so I've pushed myself now, and I've had to accept at a certain point. I sobered up in 2016. And so I went off my hydros as I walked into my doctor's office one day, and he was no longer there. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, well, I came for my prescription refill. And they said, you know, people coming here looking for opioids today. So I said to the nurse, and I said, if you look through my file, you'll see, you know, like I've been with them for a long time. So she looked through my file, and she's like, you're right. I'm so sorry. I'll get you in with another doctor. So she did, except what he told me is I was on way too high of a dose. And he was only comfortable giving me half of that.
Okay, and that's a step that'd be hard to handle after a while.
Oh, yeah.
Higher dosage.
And besides that, Al, I was young, and I was in so much pain that I went behind, like, nobody knew at first, mm-hmm. because all I could think of was when I go to the hospital and they mm-hmm. give me morphine, right, through yeah. IV, how much it took away my pain. So I found out that people were injecting this stuff, and I went to my doctor's office, and I went and grabbed a couple syringes out of the room, and I...
Uh-oh.
Yeah, and then someone had mentioned Street Connections, like around me, so
right.
I called them, and that was my first experience. So it was, to me, about pain management, except I became my own doctor, and you can't take care of your pain through IV, you know what I mean? So it was a slippery slope from there. I actually I'm always very honest, and people can judge me all they want. I don't care. So like I said, you're always one step away from, I was always looking through the other side of the glass, you know. I'll never do coke. When people were talking about, I can't get off these opioids, the withdrawal, I'm like, oh, suck it up, you mm-hmm. can do it. No, trust me, they are horrible. So, and everything that I've done has shaped my life to the point when I had my first daughter, and to now even more, where I've gained so much more insight, and I'm so grateful for it. So anyway, back to that, then I started injecting cocaine. I had a couple, so again, when you're using opioids, your mind is not clear, right?
No, of course not.
So I had a couple that asked me if I wanted to try it, and they gave it to me for the first time. Through all my experiences, and I apologize if I'm not remembering the time, but I know myself. Mm-hmm. I have never, ever, ever done that to someone, you know? Like, if someone had never tried something, I'd be like, no, you're not doing it. You know, like, I've lived through it, you're not doing it.
Right.
So anyways, that began the start of my, and it was still my choice in the end to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was the start of using IV cocaine, and then I had enough. I always said the best thing my mom ever did for me was cut me off financially. I was living at home, and I was putting her through hell. Pretty much, she's watching her daughter destroy her life.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted to keep me there. My kids were there. I hid things as well as I could for my kids always, because
right.
I didn't want that around them. We had lived in our own place for a while. And I'll never forget the first day my son said to me, Mommy, you smell like beer, and I was hungover.
Yeah.
So I always made sure that I even didn't smell like alcohol after that.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, because I remember being young, and I remember a friend of mine's dad, like, kissing us goodnight on the forehead, and he stunk like beer. So I remember
right.
I remembered what it was like, right? And so I didn't want my kids around that. Sorry, I'm just going to have some coffee here.
Sure.
I've been through horrible things, too. I mean, I had, when I was 16, I played basketball at the Y.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a crush on an older guy who's 26.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was very courageous back then. So I asked him if he wanted to hang out one night.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never not been home. And he took me to his place. What I thought was his place, anyways. And he said, here, he's like, try some root beer schnapps. And I don't... yeah.
And away you go, right?
I had no idea what date rape drug was then.
Mm-hmm.
But all I remember is waking up, and I had bought a six pack of beer, but it was still in the fridge. Mm. I'm like, he's like, oh no, no, you were hammered. And then it turned out that it was his friend's place, and I was in other clothes. Like I said, I'd never not been home.
Whoa.
So, I mean, then when I realized, when I got caught later in life what mm-hmm. date rape drug was, I'm like, oh my God, that guy date raped me. Mm. You know? I was like, I couldn't believe it. And back then, I was still drinking, so I ended up seeing him at the bar, and I walked up to him, and I said, hey, do you remember me? And he's like, yeah, Rebecca. I was like, yeah. So I started hitting him in the face, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry. Man. I'm so sorry you went through that.
Oh, it was awful. And then I went through another. I got in BC, in Kelowna. It happened again, except I got home. Somebody got me home because I was at the bar where I was mm-hmm. working.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was five, my mom moved somebody into the house that had done some not nice things to me
mm-hmm.
Over a period of a year. I won't go into detail, but it
was... No, of course not.
Yeah, and then she also moved in a girl that was older than me at one point from foster care system that did some things. So that was, I mean, that was hard at
yes.
the time. When you're that young, you're mm-hmm. taught to believe it's a game,
you know,
right?
Yeah, so I think that your childhood probably led to, you know, your addiction in your
time.
Life.
And yeah.
I think that a lot of people don't look that deep to find reasons for it.
No. Yeah. I had to look back at everything. And also, too, my mom, not a lot was known about ADHD back then, right? Mm. So I moved from school to school to school. And I remember when I first sobered up, I said, you know, the problem wasn't with everyone else. It was with me. Mm. But I was saying, like, I had a problem. And then I realized, I'm like, no, like, I needed therapy. There was something going on that I really needed. I didn't have therapy. I didn't have, you know, my mom felt bad for me. It would get to a point where mm-hmm. she's like, hey, like, we'll go here, we'll go there. I went to 7 schools in total, mm-hmm. Right up until high school, and I didn't graduate.
Mm-hmm.
But because I was intelligent, I had a specialist tell me last year. And again, I'm stubborn with medications, mm-hmm. right? I know now never to take my own med pain management into my own hands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll tell you about the hospital in a second. But so I had a specialist last year tell me, she says, you have ADHD. She said, you've been overlooked for it your entire life because mm-hmm. you're intelligent. Try the medication. And when I did, I could not believe the difference.
Mm.
I actually completed a introductory course to the sociology of music at a university course, and like right up at the top of my class, you know, and it was through Shelter U with Booth University College.
Yes.
Yeah.
I teach occasionally over there.
Yeah. So it's such a privilege. Dr. Ern Boston really, really, really did a great job, and I'm going to be starting this week, actually, or next week, I think it is. So
awesome.
It was through my, and I'm really proud of myself because, so in 2021, if you can imagine this, like anyone listening, so you sober up, you get your life together, you had to do certain things to your common law that, because there was physical abuse,
mm-hmm.
One night, he had relapsed, he strangled me,
mm-hmm.
And the neighbors phoned the police, and I personally wouldn't have charged him, but that's just who I am, because it's, I don't know, I would have rather just kicked him out and, you know, like, whatever. But the neighbors called the police. They could see strangle marks around my neck, so they charged him. And there was an NCO put in place for myself and my daughter. Then my mom passed away. 2 days after... And all of a sudden, my older two kids weren't talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
2 days after, I found out that they were going to my mom's house, everybody. So I went and picked up Tim Hortons and coffee. And again, I'm sober at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I went and picked up Tim Hortons and coffee. And I got there, and my mom said, well, where is everybody? And they said, well, we and the kids came here yesterday. And I just, you know, my heart broke, but I just stayed calm. And so that was, and I have something called called dissociative amnesia. So I only remember little bits and pieces of things. So
well, that's going to be difficult.
Oh, so I got some of my memories back, and that's why I'm able to explain these things to you. I didn't remember any of this stuff before.
Mm-hmm.
But in January, on January 22nd, 2022, so my mom passed in August of 2020. August 5th, January 22nd, 2022. Again, I had ADHD, which really affected my follow through and my like being at appointments on time and all that kind of stuff, especially for my health, you know. So I ended up getting to the pharmacy 5 minutes late, and I wasn't going to have my methadone for a couple days. And I had already gone through this from methadone to Suboxone, from hydros to methadone, and then when I got up to a high enough dose, I stopped hearing and seeing things, but I didn't realize I was in psychosis. I was just terrified. It was one of the most terrifying, I think it took a year and a half to go away. But this time, it hit me the day after. I was in my living room, and I was looking around, and I was going, whoa, everything's fake. I started cleaning the underneath of my my kitchen. And then I would hit a point of reality, and I'm like, I got to get my daughter out of here. So I phoned CFS myself, and I said, I'm withdrawing. Can you come pick her up? Because you don't want to tell people you're going crazy, you know? I made so many excuses to go to the hospital because psychosis is so terrifying, but they finally put me in the psychiatric unit March of 2025. I'd been out of reality for 3 months by then. And they put me on Suboxone, and I started to balance out. I started to feel a little better once I got to a high enough dose of Suboxone, because when the drug that is causing you psychosis from withdrawals is re-implemented, it will take away the symptoms of psychosis.
Okay.
So they re-implemented Suboxone. They had me out of there in 5 days, but again, I ended up homeless. I had not paid my rent. I heard a voice telling me to pay my hydro. So I paid my hydro anyways, which is a good thing, but I hadn't paid my rent. I hadn't talked to my daughter. People didn't know what was going on because, again, I told them I was withdrawing, right?
Yeah.
So automatically people assumed it was drugs. Even people around me thought it was drugs. So normally if I had underlying mental illness, like bipolar, schizophrenia, you can deteriorate, right? Usually there's drug involvement with that. But I was withdrawing, so I was deteriorating. So it really resembled drug use, right? I remember my son messaging me and saying, Mom, go to rehab. I'm like, rehab? I'm not on drugs. You know, like, I didn't get it. So anyways, I balanced out. I got to the street, Salvation Army for the second time. They have been a huge part of my journey, and I'm so grateful for them.
Folks, Rebecca, we just got to take a station break, and we'll be back in about 3 minutes, so hang in there. And you too, audience, we'll be back soon.
All right. Thanks, Al.
Esta noche estar contigo y te muestro el sol que no has podido ver. Déjame con ansias consolarte y decirte que si hay vida en Marte, ven. Déjame jugar, enamorarte, el juego donde el corazón se parte en cien.
Déjame intentar ir a buscarte, de tus propios miedos rescatarte. Ven.
Déjame cantarte la mañana para que te den más ganas de un café. Déjame dejar en tu ventana flores frescas para perfumar la fe. Déjame quemar a fuego intenso estos dos recuerdos que quieres perder. Déjame llegar a donde el tiempo traiga por sorpresa un mítico placer.
Busco con mis dedos entregarte al mundo, que se acorte la distancia un paso a la vez.
Busco que tú sepas que en tu voz me inundo, busco en mis palabras cómo hacerte comprender.
Consolarte y decirte que si hay vida en Marte, ven.
Busco con mis dedos entregarte el mundo, que se acorte la distancia un paso a la vez.
Busco que tú sepas que en tu voz me inundo, busco en mis palabras cómo hacerte comprender que eres solo mía. Ahora una necesidad que yo no tenía. La más dulce realidad eres la manía que no quiero eliminar y nunca querría. Ya lo tienes que aceptar, eres solo mía.
Ahora una necesidad que yo no tenía. La más dulce realidad eres la manía que no quiero eliminar y nunca querría.
Ya lo tienes que aceptar.
And welcome back, folks. That was a really chill piece of music by, let me see.
Alex Cuba.
Alice. Hang on, let me see this. Sorry, Alex Cuba. I really like that. And I was telling Debbie how stressed I was, so she put on a de-stressing song. So it was really, really good. Folks, it's 11 degrees. I think it's 11 degrees out. It's a bit of a breeze. Be kind. See a person on the sidewalk. There's always one in front of Tim's on Portage Avenue. You know, buy an extra coffee and... they'll appreciate it so much. Today we have our guest on. By the way, I was told I did not mention our station, our program name. It's, of course, Hope Elliott of No Fixed Address Show, and we are an advocacy group for those who can't speak for themselves. And today we have my guest, Rebecca Goulet, and we're talking about stories of addiction. And I'm just hearing from your voice and from your story that life has just not been easy. What are you doing now? Are you feeling better about things today than you did, say, 5 years ago?
I am feeling better about things. But the terrifying part is that something hit me. The psychosis off the methadone that I could have never imagined possible. Mm-hmm. Right? Well, I was solid in my recovery. You know, there was a point where I was going to go to social, and I was like, "No, if I go there, I'm going to drink." Mm-hmm. Like I was good. Mm-hmm. Everything happened, and I was good. And then something hit that led me to a relapse. Mm-hmm. And so, When I came out of that one, I also went into another one that landed me in jail from Suboxone. So I abstain from all opioid and opioid replacements now, unless it's after surgery or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But so anyways, when I was in the hospital for a year and 4 months, and
that's a long time.
Oh, it was a long time, yeah. So I was out of reality from the Suboxone for 8 months. So the longer you are out of reality and in psychosis, the more damage it does to your mind.
I'm sure.
Yeah, and it can take up to 5 years for your mind to start healing. Like I said, I had no memories, right? I had dissociative amnesia, which I still have.
Mm-hmm.
I look at videos. When I first came out, I was looking at videos.
Mm-hmm.
Conversations I had, I didn't remember being there. Mm-hmm. I knew who my kids were. I knew who I was. I knew birthdays, all that. But I didn't have the memory.
Okay.
You know, it was... So it did start coming back when people started talking to me. Mm-hmm. But... So, I mean, one other experience I can share with you that was very traumatic was I got a friend of mine actually that just messaged me. He didn't say anything, but he reminded me about it.
Right.
Was I was living in Manitoba housing, and a couple friends of mine had said, "Oh, do you want to come on a run? Like, you know, this and that." And I'd grown up with bikers, I've been a part of their life,
right.
And so. I didn't realize that it was a different biker organization.
Okay.
And so by the time I got out there, it was too late. And the people that brought me out there seemed to drift away. And I was like, where are they? Where are they? I want to go home. And by the time of the end of the night came, I had a man telling me that if I didn't sleep with him, he was going to, like, you could tell I was a kind person, right? That he was going to pave himself, get on his bike and pave himself on the pavement. And he was serious. Like, he was being, I don't know if he would have actually done it, but to me at that point.
Emotional blackmail, serious. My goodness.
Oh, my goodness. It was awful. And then from there, I went out. He took me to Portage. I remember one time I finally got away from him. And someone brought me home, and then not even half an hour later, he phoned me, said he was halfway to my house and that I better be up front. So I ended up going to...
Isn't kidnapping against the law these days?
yeah, except it was like, it was, I ended up having to like, get, like, you know, like Stockholm Syndrome? It's not so much that I started identifying with him, I had to get comfortable to my situation because I didn't know... I worked, right? I went to Sobeys, I worked at the tavern. He was like, when you're done your shift, you get off. And so he beat me so bad one night that he stripped me naked. I was grabbing for the phone. He had put a gun in my mouth. He had bashed my head against the floor.
How are you still surviving today after all of this?
You know what? Every time that it's built strength in me, strength. Mm-hmm. Resilience, I wrote something one day. It says, you cannot pay for the strength and endurance that I have with a gym membership.
You know? There you go, yeah. who has been there for you?
My mom. My mom was there for me through thick and thin. She, you know, and I, like I said, I'm proud of her for telling me to get out of the house.
Yeah.
You know? It took, from the time she told me to get out of the house, it took a very short time for me to hit rock bottom with the hydromorphone and say, okay, I can't do this anymore, right? It was just a vicious cycle, and I was finished. And then I would have gone to rehab, except, again, I was in psychosis and didn't realize it, right? So I was at Salvation Army. I worked very hard. I went through 3 different places. Mm-hmm. After a year of sobriety, I eventually had my daughter.
How was life with your daughter?
Oh, it's good. I don't get enough time with her, but it is amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, and like I said, Al, the one thing is, you know, like they say how your life can be gone in a split second. Three and a half years, I stayed strong, and just 5 minutes late to the pharmacy.
Yeah, sometimes we need that focus to be a motivator, I think. And
now that I have ADHD medication, and again, it's like I'm on time for my appointments. I am there, you know.
Awesome.
Yeah, there's things with my health where it has fallen back a little bit, and that's my health reasons, and I'm trying to vocalize that more because it's hard when people don't understand what your health condition is and they feel like you're making excuses, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, basically all I can do is vocalize it and hope that they believe it.
Yeah.
But I remember when I came out of it all, I said, thanks God, I sober up, and then you hit me with mental health.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
Like, I was like, but... Again, everything I've been through. So the one on Suboxone now, oh my goodness. Everyone knew that I did not like methamphetamine. There were guys that were trying to sleep with me that I was like, no, because I was in my right state of mind, you know what I mean? Or right-ish state of mind because I had relapsed on alcohol and cocaine. And so when I went into the third psychosis off Suboxone, they were taking advantage of me. Somehow methamphetamine got introduced. So that made it even a harder case for people to advocate for me, you know, like with mental health, right? So because I eventually heard voices telling me to go get my superpower. Psychosis is terrifying. I've never been through anything worse in my life than psychosis. And I'm not even kidding you. It brought me to, I call it sheer terror, like the levels your mind can bring you to through psychosis is awful. So anyways, I was on the street. I was getting kicked out of shelters at 3 in the morning. And that's because I was acting erratically. It's not someone who I am. And they had, you know, they needed to kick me out. And I understand that now.
Right.
Then I didn't understand because I was out of reality, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it would be raining outside. It would be pouring. I would be sleeping in bus tracks and counting down the hours until buses were running. I would bus all the way to the airport and stay in the bus track there.
Of course.
It was heated. You know, it was. And
that's the tough part, you know, about home, but not having anywhere to go. It's just always finding somewhere, you know, just to try to stay warm and somewhat comfortable. There's never anywhere comfortable, you know. When I couldn't make it back to my car where I was sleeping, and I was homeless, I'd sleep in stairwells in parkades until security guard kicked me out, right?
Yeah, for sure. I was bussed in a couple of those places too. I buzzed and say, oh, I forgot my key, or I took the garbage out, and someone would let me in.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
That's it.
I remember this one place because the state of the showers in one of the shelters was so horrible. It was awful showering there. And because I was in psychosis, when you hit reality, a lot of things that people do to you while you're in psychosis, they're painful. I also understand, yes, I was acting in a certain way, except when you're working a job, you need to have, you need to educate yourself on what people are going through because that's not who they are, and you shouldn't be treating them differently. You shouldn't be discriminating, right?
Right.
One of the best places that I stayed in, I love 190 Desvarelli. I was so happy that it was open, and I even got banned from there for life. You know what I mean?
But
did a lot. They did a lot for me. And the last place I ended up was Main Street Project.
Yes.
And it got to a point where they were not even giving me soap to shower with. It was all lined up there. There was toothpaste, everything, but they would no longer give it to me because they didn't like me because I was causing problems there. And so I remember one day, I don't know. There was a one gentleman that worked there, and he felt so bad for me, like, because I can see through now. And he was looking around, and he would grab clothes, and he'd give them to me, you know what I mean? And then I took off, because they were, I guess, told not to give me anything. That being said, it was still nice to have a place to stay, you know what I mean? And not everybody is the same, and I haven't been down there in a while, so it's not that I am speaking poorly about them. I know they've got a lot more funding now from the government, which is really good. They can expand, and I hope that I know the staff has changed a lot there, so that's Most likely.
We have a mutual friend at Salvation Army, Anna Maria.
Mark.
And Mark, who's the executive director, because I spent, 14 and a half months there way back in the day, and Mark and I have become good friends, and Anna Maria and I as well. But has she had an influence on you?
Oh, she's an amazing woman.
Mm-hmm.
She is an amazing woman. I like to do things on my own, but if I ever have questions, I always go to her. She's got great input. She has got the lived experience. What I love about her is her education. The way she speaks, her knowledge about things, she is just, she's fabulous, and I appreciate her introducing us.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I have a great affection for both of those. And, when I was there, Mark was the one person that didn't treat me like I was homeless. He treated me like a human being. And Anna Maria, I commend her, and I'm so inspired by her recovery from her previous life. And she had a really, really tough life in the past, too. And I was happy that she shared it with me, but, kind of surprised that she shared it with me. But she's been through a tough time, too. And all going through tough times makes you understand people a lot better,
It does. It shouldn't be, for anyone listening out there, it shouldn't be where empathy comes from.
No.
It shouldn't be where we're wanting to do better comes from. You shouldn't have to suffer to care,
That's it.
But at the same time, because our world is the way it is, I truly believe that we were put here, a lot of us, to go through what we went through, so that when we come out of it, we can help other people.
Oh, I truly believe that. And
because when you're going through it, it's hard to believe.
I still shake my head and say, what am I doing here? Because you have... number one, surviving in the first place, and then number two, given doors of opportunities and all that kind of stuff. And I know this is not me doing this; it's somebody else, pointing me in the right direction and taking me there.
I had someone say to me the other day, "How are you still alive?"
Mentally.
And
exactly.
There was a friend of mine and myself that I didn't realize, but other people thought too. They thought both of us were doomed, that we were, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So.
But, when the light, again, stigma about addictions and judgments and all that, I'm sure you faced a lot of... adversity because of how people treat you because they know you have an addiction.
Oh, yeah, big time. I have a lot of Indigenous friends where I've literally walked into hospitals and I will go up and talk to someone and then they'll get treated differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I do it on purpose.
Yes.
And I walk up and I say, excuse me, why are you treating this person differently than you're treating me? I'm actually with them,
Yes.
And so they're, as much as the, my foster sister shared a lot with me.
Mm-hmm.
So just trying to rotate here and focus on what, what's going on with Truth and Reconciliation. I'm glad it's happening. Honestly, I don't think it'll ever be enough. My grandmother is, and I don't like to announce this, but she's Elder May Louise Campbell.
Yes.
So I have a very
strong...
She's
really well respected in this community.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I have a very strong connection to traditional roots.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it's like, I always say I'm very diluted, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a diluted Indigenous person. It's just my own kind of terminology for it.
Mm-hmm.
But... I care, though. My sister told these stories about how her mom had jumped on her stomach. And at that point, I'm thinking how horrible it is from a kid. But as I grew up and learned the cycle and what had happened and everything, it's awful. So I'm trying to be a part of that as much as possible. I'm speaking at the Lynx annual AGM, which is going to be monumental one.
Yes.
They are going to be the first not-for-profit organization in Canada to transition into First Nations.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so it's going to be going to be a monumental day, and I'm going to be very happy to be a part of that.
Yeah, I'm so glad. Any last words you'd like to leave with our station listeners today?
Yeah, anyone that's going through whatever you're going through, I know that you feel like people aren't caring and helping. They are unfortunately stuck in jobs where they have limitations, and they care, they want to help. And I said to somebody one day, you got to find it within yourself, and you got to dig deep, and you got to get yourself out of the situation you're in, because when no one is able to, or no one is there to help you, we got to help ourselves.
Yeah.
You know?
Thank you so much for coming on air today. I know you shared a lot of really, really deeply personal stuff, and I thank you for doing that. And I know that's not easy. And but I think you, like me, feel that I'd be not doing my particular, taking care of my own particular responsibilities if I did not talk about my experiences to help others get through.
And to
lend knowledge to other people as well who have not been through addiction or homelessness. And I think it's important that our voices are out there, and that's why I liked why I asked you if you wanted to be on today too, because lived experience, I don't have enough people with lived experience on air. But thanks for coming on today.
Not a problem, Al.
And we'll have the coffee soon. Take care.
Thanks again.
You bet.
Thank you to your producer.
Thank you, Debbie. Folks, that was Rebecca Goulet, a person who has been through a lot in her life of addiction. And I don't envy her, Debbie, for having that. You know, I'm really, really lucky that I was not born with that gene. And sometimes there are things in your life that cause you to be that way or to pick up an addiction. But I was always, I always feel lucky that it never affected me, even though I did dabble. When I was in BC, I dabbled in everything, but nothing stuck. So, I was thrilled and happy about that. But again, I think somebody was looking after me in that regard too, because some people, one taste and you're hooked for forever. But folks, come back next week. This week I was kind of way too busy to really pay attention to the show and get myself some guests, but we landed Rebecca. I'm really happy about that. However, I had about six respondents say, yeah, let's get on in the next week or two. So I'm going to have a plethora of guests to choose from for next week. So come on back. And I think we may be speaking for the first time to Windjust City. And they do remarkable work. They're a small shelter, but they do extremely good work. But they also are in charge now of West End Commons and a number of other locations around the city. And we need to speak to people like this too to get their stories and also get their success stories, because they are a success story and have done really, really well. But folks, come back next week, and we'll have another show that hopefully keeps your interest for 45 minutes or so. It's cool today. Be kind. Buy a coffee. Buy a steep tea. Take care.
Los hombres te lo dicen con la boca, con la misma te provocan, y por eso hoy me rindo. Ahora mismo yo me quito por respeto el sombrero, y si soy yo el primero, que me siga, que me sigan. Quien no sabe de la vida, del placer y maravilla, si fuera yo el hombre aquel, iría a su lado feliz, viviera solo por besarla hasta sentir dentro de mí que no hace falta el poder si la alegría llena tu forma de ser. Las mujeres, las mujeres, oh.
por eso hoy me rindo.
Ahora mismo
yo me quito,
por respeto,
el sombrero.
Y si soy yo
el primero
que me siga,
que me sigan.
Quien no sabe
de la vida,
del placer y
maravillas.
Ya me cansé de dominar con esa fuerza brutal que no es inteligente. A mucha gente da la oscuridad y el no saber de verdad cómo alcanzar de un golpe la felicidad que puede estar a unos minutos de ti, en cualquier rostro que te invite a ser feliz. Las mujeres,
¡oh!
Las mujeres, yeah, yeah, yeah. Las mujeres,
las mujeres,
pero qué lindas son las mujeres. Las mujeres,
las mujeres,
es lo más bello el amor de mujeres. Las mujeres,
las mujeres
son fuente de vida, de magia y de encanto. Las mujeres,
las mujeres,
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. ¿Qué quieres? ¿Qué quieres? Yeah, 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 yeah.
We're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.
Generous support to CKUW 95.9 FM is provided by Diversity Food Services. Diversity is a social enterprise committed to a just and fair food economy in Winnipeg. Elements Restaurant at 501 Portage Avenue is a proud part of Diversity Food Services family, a full-service, licensed sit-down restaurant with easy access right off of Portage Avenue.
Testing.
Every Tuesday night, unfold the sonic blanket and wrap yourself in the sounds of punk, indie rock, electronic, and much more from near and far. We get cozy every Tuesday night from 6 to 7 on CKUW 95.9 FM.
Natural things on Earth and how they interact is biodiversity. From the microscopic to the mighty, from the smallest body of water to the coldest, from underground to the highest ground. When biodiversity is rich, we can count on the natural world to produce the oxygen we breathe, filter and purify the water we drink, and grow the plants we rely on for food and medicine. Due to human activities, biodiversity is being lost faster than nature can replenish it. So let's do what we can to help preserve biodiversity. Create natural spaces and plant native species. Take part in a wildlife survey. Get out and experience Canada's amazing variety of wildlife. And that's just a start. To learn more about biodiversity and how you can help protect it, visit hww.ca.